So hello and welcome to this week's Total Rugby League Show. I'm your host Ben, and joining me here back at League Express HQ, more's the pity. I do like this building, but it's not Saddleworth, let's be honest. But we're joined once again by Sunshine Indoors, Mr. Martin Sadler and Matthew Shaw.
Brilliant, thanks. a glowing reference.
Thank you, Ben. Yeah.
So hello everybody and welcome to the Total Rugby League Show.
I thought you were going to say the real problem this week is that we've not got Ralph Rimmer.
Oh, there is that too, hopefully we'll do for the listener at home.
Yeah.
Hopefully just as illuminating.
And if anybody missed last week's broadcast, then on the Total RL website, you'll hear Ralph Rimmer talking about various fascinating things.
Exactly.
Chief exec of the RFL. So.
Ricky will be as well, and he's on back chat this week.
He is on back chat this week.
Yeah, absolutely. Coming up on this week's show, we've got a preview for the upcoming Easter Games. We're also going to be talking the Challenge Cup, of course, and later we'll be talking player development with Halifax's player performance manager, Martin Gonzalez, because Halifax aren't in crisis anymore. In fact, got a bright future.
Whoever said Halifax were in crisis?
Wasn't me, anyway.
I don't think I said they're in crisis. Come on.
I think it was Aaron off mic a few weeks ago. Yeah. But from West Yorkshire to way out west and North America. And obviously the meeting took place last week. Matthew, what happened?
The clubs, New York and Ottawa, presented to the Championship and League One clubs and five Super League clubs that were present. I will go through them for the sake of it, Saints, Warrington, Salford, Hull KR and Leeds. They then took questions from the floor. At the end of that, the clubs were asked for a show of hands, in effect. It wasn't an official vote, it was a show of hands, basically, for either their support or not the support of the two clubs, and they voted 19-4 in favour.
And this is what's known as an indicative vote, which is all the rage at the moment in every walk of life, it would appear.
It is.
And
it's not binding, in other words, RFL directors will meet presumably next week, I imagine, or maybe...
The clock's ticking,
The next board meeting isn't due till May. So whether they push that forward,
but they can have a conference meeting, can't they?
Yeah,
you know, and make a decision.
I think
because time is of the essence.
It is. At the same time, it's important that they do the due diligence right.
Crikey, so, yes.
Haven't they had 2 years to do the due diligence?
Well, they must have done it presumably before they had the meeting last week.
I think
one imagines you don't suddenly start doing due diligence, you know, when everybody's said they're in favour.
Can we just wildly speculate and just assume that was the finances behind the bid and the sponsors and that kind of thing, and now it's about the player side? I'm just speculating on that. That would make sense to me.
I think from what the clubs have said, the due diligence is still on the financial side.
Right.
Just getting a look at the owner, the backers, basically. That's that, basically. Predominantly, it's still financial.
But it looks like both bids were professionally done, which I don't think we should be surprised about. But to my money, I think New York were the ones who had a lot of aces up the sleeve, who just went pow, 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 have that. And I've surprised a few people with some of the corporate sponsors that they had on board.
Yeah. If you're asking me to pick between the two, I was bought over more by New York than Ottawa.
But I did ask the question last week to Ralph, which was a backhanded way of saying, are you going to have two clubs or not? Is even numbers or odd numbers for the league going to be? He's not bothered. So
it's possible. You could conceivably have one coming in next season and one coming in the season after. Because actually, if you've got two new clubs, both seeking players, you know, that's going to be really a challenge for the game as a whole, I think. And you know, there may not be enough players to go around. You know, some people might say
I'm not sure. I've always thought, my conspiracy has always been that when the latest league structure was brought in, the long-term plan, heaven forbid there's actually a long-term plan, would be to have 3-4 teams. That's how I always saw it going down.
There's the potential for that, isn't there? But we still, you know, we still need a few more clubs coming in that case.
You would still be three short. Wherever they come from, I don't know. It looks like they're both going to come in. I'm not against that. By me saying that, I thought New York stood out more. That doesn't mean I didn't think Ottawa was impressive. I just thought New York was bang, 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 as you said. And it was like, the only concern I have is it almost seems too good to be true, the New York bid.
Well,
that's what the due diligence is for.
Yeah, of course.
That's the idea, isn't it? To check out whether it is too good to be true.
Yeah.
And hopefully it isn't.
And if it is true, this is welcome. There's not much downside to this other than it'll
cost us a fortune covering their home games.
Martin, if you want me to reside in New York for a rugby league season, I will put my
CV. I'll do it. I got D in French.
Okay. No, we'll...
I got a B, so I definitely...
Actually, Matt, I'm waiting for a bid from Antarctica for your home games.
Oh, you'll be up against that penguin, though, Matthew. Yeah. Anyway.
The Antarctica penguins, they've got time for that.
Just to add, Aaron's already put up an article on the Total RL website, I think, about the Ottawa side of things as well, and the bit about player development and a bit more about the bids. So totalrl.com, the place to go in the meantime while you're waiting for news to break about that due diligence and that kind of thing.
I've got to say, and I know I'm a bit biased when I say this, I think in times like these, when you have a big story like this is where the trades come out to shine. I thought the coverage was really good, and I say that, obviously it's a bit daft for me to say because I'm part of it, but I do think this is where the trades have a special place for rugby league coverage.
Oh yeah, just absolutely.
Smash it out of the park in times like this.
Well, let's talk about other items on the agenda for this week, and that brings us to the Easter games, and we might as well start with Wigan against St Helens, because there's two things to talk about here. St Helens on the pitch, absolutely storming it last week against Warrington. Wigan off the pitch, not so much. But we're nearly there.
When it comes to this derby, that doesn't mean much.
No.
Actually, none of that means a damn thing, if we're really honest about it. I mean, Wigan are saying they've sold over 20,000 tickets for this game, which is a pretty good achievement, I think, you know, given the way that they've upset some of their fans recently. But at least they've now made a decision on this Sean Edwards thing, haven't they? You know, we all thought it wasn't going to happen, and now it's not going to. So at least they can move on from that and start thinking about affairs on the field. You know, Wigan had a disappointing defeat to Wakefield at the weekend. Wakefield were absolutely outstanding. And St Helens had an absolutely scintillating win against their nearest challengers, Warrington. I thought Saints were brilliant. Wormsley and Thompson, the front row, are absolutely creaming it at the moment, let's face it. So, you know, you'd think that Saints would be the favourites to win on Friday, but, you know, we've seen that before, and Wigan have shocked us in the past. So, you know, I wouldn't bank on anything if I were fans of either side. And, you know, you want to get down to the stadium and shout your team on, because it's going to be really exciting, I think.
Now, I've seen the statement. I'm not going to really go into it because it looks like it's been written by two lawyers, and I can't afford a lawyer to comment. But
I'll go into it.
No, I was going to say, how important is it now for Wigan to finally put this to bed and get a replacement, be that Lamb or a other?
Well, yeah, obviously it's important, but sorry, Ben, the real question is why it's been allowed to happen. You could pick apart that statement. At will. I mean, he said he didn't have enough time to prepare for the role. This, despite being announced as the head coach 15 months before he was due to take the post. He also said he didn't feel like he was the right man or had the qualification or whatever to take it.
Well, I think that's been shown. Yeah.
Why take it?
Yeah, yeah.
Nonsense. It was nonsense. Mm. And I honestly think I saw a discussion on social media of people saying he can no longer be regarded as a club legend. Now, I think
this has damaged his status at Wigan, there's no doubt about it.
It has to have done, hasn't it?
Whereas when the announcement was made, the Wigan fans were excited and really looking forward to him coming back. Now he's lost it with them, you know, and it's a great shame because, I mean, he is a club legend, really. He's just in effect kicked them in the, you know, where it hurts.
Given what's happened with all this, is it time for Wigan to go back to the drawing board and maybe not think about hiring a club legend and going?
Well, hire the best
external man
for the job.
Yes,
a lot of people thought he would be,
and drawing a line under it ultimately.
You've got. I always think, and I'm big on this. I do think that the future is with British coaches. I think the track record proves that generally, if you give a British coach longevity,
it's a pretty big job as well.
It is, but I just look at the track. Darryl Powell's the obvious one, but you can look at Ian Watson, who under circumstances done a remarkable job at Salford. Paul Anderson, when he was at Huddersfield, yeah, it ran out of steam, but he took them to heights that no one thought they could do. Even in the game now, Chris Chester, give British coach. And I mean, there's so many good young British coaches out there at the minute that, for me, if I was Wigan, I don't think that they should have to think that they need a name.
No, I'd be reluctant to get another Australian. Actually, there are six Australian coaches and six British coaches in Super League. And it's interesting, of the bottom five clubs in Super League at the moment, four of them are coached by Australians.
Top two are coached by Australians
as well. Yes, I was waiting for you to say that. Yeah. So all the ones just outside the top two are coached by English coaches. I don't think that means that much, if I'm really honest about it. But it's an interesting thing to point out. You know, and you've got to say, I think the problem Australian coaches have over here is coming to terms with the sort of psychology of British players, which is quite different to Australian players. You know, Australian coaches in Australia can ditch players who don't toe the line. It's much more difficult to do that.
Do you know what I think it is, actually? Assistant coaches in Australia are expected to do everything.
Mm.
And they take the role of a head coach over here is much more in line to being the assistant coach in the NRL as it is actually being a head coach in the NRL. I think if you look at the success stories that come from Australia, they have a background of being assistant coaches in the NRL rather than head coaches.
Well, Holbrook certainly falls into that category.
Steve Price does.
Yeah, yeah.
And before
although
that,
he had been a head coach.
Very
in
briefly, yeah. But you got Michael Maguire before that.
Yeah.
Who fell into the same. Correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't Trent Robinson the same?
Sure, yeah.
I think that's where you've got to look at.
Well, they come over here and make their reputation, don't they? And then go back as head coaches.
Quickly, I'll take the time with it.
I think they'll keep Lamb for the season. I think to be fair, he needs the time. It's a dress rehearsal for him, this. I don't think knocking him off now. He's made a big leap in his career coming and taking the role for a year, knowing too well that's probably what it was.
If Lamb wins this game on Friday, there'll be nobody saying that, you know, nobody criticising him at all.
The other way around is if they lose the game.
Oh, yeah, that's more serious.
And then everyone will bring up the off-field stuff and what's going on. It depends on the manner of the performance as well.
I mean, let's talk about Saints just before we move on to Warrington's match against Salford this weekend. Saints were unbelievable against Warrington. Mm. Warrington didn't really do that much wrong, I don't think. I mean, apart from get a player Simbind in a crucial stage of the game.
And Saints scored two tries while he was off the field. And it was a bit unfortunate that was Mike Cooper, who I admire a tremendous amount. And Steve Price had been, you know, fuming about him not being in the England elite performance squad. So it was a bit unfortunate that he was the guy who got Simbind, and that led to Saints establishing a big lead.
When you're playing against Alex Wormsley and Luke Thompson as well, he's probably the last player other than Chris Hill that you want off the field.
Absolutely, yeah.
Where do Warrington go next? Obviously, they're hosting Salford on Friday. Salford somewhat bouncing back, let's say, against Rochdale. We'll come back to that in a second.
I don't think Warrington should worry at all. They played a team that was red hot. And sometimes you've just got to hold your hands up and go, you know what, we got beat by the better team.
You've just got to bear in mind that you need to... I mean, it was great to see Saints playing like that. They were tremendous. The question for them is whether they can continue to play like that, you know, when it really counts, towards the end of the season. Last year, they slipped up in the Challenge Cup semi against the Catalans, and then they got knocked out by Warrington. Now, last year, Saints beat Warrington three times in the league, but when it came to the playoff, Warrington won the game.
This was the point I was going to make.
So, Warrington, you know, there comes a point where sometimes you hit a team that's on great, great form, and you can't do much about it. But, you know, there's always a next time, isn't there?
Martin's right. You don't, look, at the end of the day, all the first 20 whatever it is rounds now, 29, sorry, you're just jockeying for position. If you're in the top two, you're one game away from the grand final with the way the playoffs work. That's all that Warrington really needs to be worried about. It's the same for Saints, and this is the problem for Saints. We saw last year how good they were in the season.
Mm.
But then when it came to the big matches, they didn't do it.
They were lacking Alex Walmsley, of course.
Of course.
For those big matches.
Of course they were.
That's a difference.
I'm sure there were players missing for other teams.
Yeah.
But point taken.
Yeah.
That question still will hang over Saints, because they're only doing exactly what they did last year at the minute.
That's going to play in the players' minds as well, isn't it?
They've got to... And they know that. They know that ultimately their season isn't defined on what happens from February to September. It's what happens in October. And Challenge Cup, of course, or whatever that comes in as well. That's the issue that Saints face. So, yeah, they're going superbly. They've not proven anything yet. And they won't prove anything until they've got silverware at the end of the season.
You said Warrington don't necessarily have anything to worry about. Social media-wise, I think they do, because they went after Widnes. I don't know if you've seen this.
I have.
Yeah, they went after Widnes saying, sorry, we've found someone else, hope you don't mind, for our Good Friday derby. And Widnes proper burned them, didn't they?
Wow. Yes, they did. Social media's been great recently.
It really has.
There's been some really... And Warrington, some of the stuff Warrington are coming out with is absolutely...
But touché from Widnes. Touché.
Oh, yeah. That was Victor. Fantastic.
Yeah.
It's good to see that all the clubs are getting involved. And it's not just your top clubs. Stephen Downs at Dewsbury has been a viral hit in the last 24 hours. Widnes have been really good. Swinton on the quiet do a great job with their social media. I think generally the game is up in its game when it comes to social media.
Well, Warrington against Salford on Friday. Should say Wigan against St Helens is the TV game, and that'll be Eddie Hemming's last commentary. Wish him all the best with that last broadcast.
Yeah.
Then before that, though, is the Hull derby kicking off at 12:45 on Good Friday. Come to you, I think, for this bit, Martin. Catalans against Hull. Can I say controversial end to the game?
Well, it wasn't controversial. It was just brilliant on the part of Mark Snead. I've never seen a player...
Oh, I'm talking before that. The actual try that was disallowed.
The try that was disallowed.
The try that wasn't.
Yeah. I just thought we're just getting to, a point where some ridiculous decisions are being made. There's this sort of reinterpretation of the obstruction law this year, whereby any dummy runner running into the defensive line, it's a penalty regardless of whether a player is genuinely obstructed or not.
Dummy runners heading that direction.
Well, of course
anyway.
They do, and you might as well say we'll do away with dummy runners altogether. This would really change the face of the game. But in that game and in the Huddersfield game with Lee Gastel scoring, it was Matt Whitley for Catalans against Hull. They were two fabulous tries in each case that the crowd were absolutely bamboozled by. Now, it's when rugby league is disallowing what looked like great tries on a regular basis like that, you're going to really disillusion some fans, in my view.
The problem with the rule at the minute, for me, is that it's too easy for a defender who has made a bad decision or is simply on the wrong end of good play. It rewards them. They can cheat the system.
Surely the point of a dummy runner is to trick the defender.
Yeah, and look, obviously, the dummy runner can't run in and grab all
the player. But the
point is that the obstruction law refers specifically to obstruction. So a player has to be, or you would think, has to be obstructed from making a key tackle in order to earn a penalty.
Which in that case,
clearly, in neither of those cases did that happen.
The Huddersfield one was the same, wasn't it?
It was Sui Matangi running into...
Gaskell through and it was disallowed.
Yeah.
Is it an urgent one, this? Because that try Catalan scored was a great one and would make highlights real. So.
Brilliant try, yeah. And the reaction of the fans, we're all very biased as supporters, aren't we? And we all think that the referees and the system's against us. And the Catalans fans certainly do think that, and on the basis of that decision, you'd have some sympathy with them.
The problem with it, and this is the key word, the magic word, is consistency. And there was another example. So there's a video going around on social media.
The Bradford Featherstone one.
A Featherstone player is tackled. Cameron King's at dummy half. A Bradford player is stood up and is running back into the defensive line, but is in the path of Cameron King, who throws a ball to his teammate. It hits him. The referee gives a penalty against Cameron King for throwing the ball into the player. Okay? But 3 days earlier, Cruz Leeming did that against Castleford when the guy was on the floor. This guy once stood up, he was on the floor and had rolled away, and he wins a penalty.
Is that not just a referee going, you know what, I am going to change this rule because
the problem is the Cameron King one, the guy was actually in the way of his pass.
And he wasn't on the floor.
No. But it was like slow-mo, the pass that he was, the feather player was doing. It was pretty clear where that ball was going to go.
I've not seen that incident.
He was still in the way.
Yeah.
He was still in the way of the pass that he was probably going to make anyway.
I think we need to get Steve Ganson back on Backchat, don't we, to talk about some of these.
We should get him on the show.
On this show, yeah, we should do. Yeah.
I'll wing him, see how we get on. Just to say then, obviously, Sneed then did what Sneed does best and wins the game.
He actually won the game with four quite different kicks. The first one, you know, they were kicking off after they'd conceded a try with virtually no time left. He kicked the kick off short and tempted Williami to pick up the ball, you know, before it had gone 10 metres, earned a penalty. That was a piece of tactical genius, in my opinion. He then kicked the penalty from the halfway line. And as soon as you saw him get that penalty, you thought, I'll bet he kicks it.
Yeah.
You know, you knew he was going to kick it somehow. But then his brilliance hadn't stopped because Hull then had the kickoff going into golden point time. And he kicked the ball and made it bounce into touch so as to earn a scrum quite near the Catalans' line. That was his third brilliant kick. And then we all knew what was coming, didn't we? We all knew he was going to land that field.
He's signed a new contract now.
He has, and I'm not surprised.
Are you not surprised? I'm going to ask you that question.
No, because, you know, I mean, that was a wonderful illustration of his value to that side, wasn't it?
He has his critics, though.
Oh, of course he does, yeah. I mean, he doesn't take on the line as much as some people think he should. You know, he's not the perfect player by any means.
But he wins more games than he loses.
Well, he won the cup for them twice at Wembley by being the outstanding player. And he certainly won that game against the Catalans at the weekend. And it was a game, you know, where they had a really weakened side. I don't think anybody expected them to win it.
Hull taking on Hull KR then this weekend. And Adam Pearson, you spoke to him this week.
Mm-hmm.
He's obviously been listening to the show. And he said he's basically outlined what his recruitment policy is going to be for the next couple of years. Yeah. And Hull is welcomed, I'd say, based on what you've said in the past.
Well, I mean, I think he's been well aware that there's going to be a freshen up. Lee Radford said that before a ball had been kicked or a carry had been taken in. So we all knew that was coming. It was interesting what he said on Marquee, that yes, they have the money to do it, but it's not necessarily a policy that they like.
Mm.
This is why I asked about Sneed, because clearly there's going to be a change there. The reason I think Mark Sneed, and this is me speculating by the way, that Albert Kelly must be going, because I don't think if Kelly was staying that Sneed would have been kept on, personally.
No, I think you're probably right. I think Kelly has probably served his time at Hull FC by the time we get to the end of this season. They've got Connor and Sneed as a half-back pairing.
Mm-hmm.
Both players are really great kickers, actually, of the ball.
Yeah.
And I think kicking is becoming more important in the game as time goes on.
I also think, in a salary cap sport, Jake Connor is now good enough to play half-back. He's in that same stratosphere as Albert Kelly is.
Absolutely, no doubt about it.
And he's overseas, he'll be one of their big earners.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's probably time for Kelly to... Albeit, I don't know if Kelly's actually out of contract.
No, I'm not sure.
But I do think that Albert Kelly will leave at the end of the year.
Yeah, yeah.
But as we were alluding to earlier, the whole derby this weekend, big crowd, do we think? Because...
Yeah, yeah, well, you'd be
there always is, isn't there?
Yeah.
The whole fans will have been absolutely stimulated by that win in Catalans. I mean, they've won about five or six games in a row away from home now of Hull. They just don't seem to play as well at home.
Will Hull KR fans be stimulated by their victory over Lee?
Well, they'll be more stimulated than they would have been if they'd lost it. Which
too late tries in that one, wasn't
the problem, the problem, yeah. The problem Hull KR have is they've just no forwards.
Yeah.
All the forwards are injured, and the ones that are fit aren't actually fit, they're actually injured.
Yeah, so yeah. It's going to be a very difficult Easter for Hull KR, I think.
Playing on Thursday night, a night earlier, will be London against Catalans.
Biggest game of the week.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, it's a massive game for London.
Mm.
It's a sort of game.
It's kind of like, it's gone a bit backwards in a few last few weeks.
It's the sort of game that if London are going to stay up, they have to win at home. It's a Catalans playing on 3G that they aren't used to. A ground that Catalans have never played at before.
And Catalans, you know, that traditional weakness of theirs, travelling away from home, you would think. But on the face of it, you know, the Catalans pack looks far too powerful for London Broncos.
Everyone said the same about Wakefield.
They did, yeah, they did. But
it wasn't.
You know, and we'll see.
Speaking of Wakefield, obviously their match is also taking place on Thursday night. Castleford against Wakefield. Firstly, how's Danny Bruss Fums?
He's had some operation, I saw. I think he just had it wired up. So he'll play.
And we spoke about what's going on at Hull with Sneed and signing players and that kind of thing. Wakefield have been on a bit of a splurge, haven't
great
they?
Great business.
Retaining. David Fifita, oh gosh, get him signed up before May the 1st.
He's done. He's signed.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying.
Until 2022 as well. That's quite
That's a great move for Wakefield.
And Kyle Wood's been equally. Yeah, well, maybe not equally terrific.
But he's been a very good player for them, as Carl Wood.
He's been a good pickup.
Wakefield are very smart in the way they organise.
Are we expecting these signings to coincide with a bit of a lift with Wakefield more generally? Because obviously on the pitch is working out quite well. The stadium development's going to start soonish.
Wakefield are on the right path, definitely. I'm still in the camp that doesn't think they'll make the playoffs. I just think over the course of a season, the loss of Johnston. And Tupu is going to.
Well, they've signed Caton Brown now, haven't they?
He's not Tom Johnson, though. Yeah, with the greatest of respect to Mason Caton Brown.
No, but he's very quick. He's actually a very quick winger.
Absolutely.
You know,
but
so you know, I think a lot depends on when Bill Tupu gets back. Mm. You know, I think he's a really crucial player for Wakefield.
What about Castleford and that result against Huddersfield last week? We'll come to Huddersfield in a second, but just on the specifics
If you look at the team that Cass are putting out right now, I don't think they should be winning games. You've got too many big players out and they've too many players out. Mm. I think the fact that they are competing in games is what makes it actually more frustrating, because they could realistically have had 3 wins out of the recent string of defeats, and with a weakened team out, that would have been phenomenal. But they're just coming up short.
They are losing some tight games, aren't they?
A lot.
You know, it's a strange thing, isn't it, that some clubs do seem to find it difficult to win games when they get, you know, to a tight margin, and some teams are good at winning those games.
Wakefield did it last year, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Wakefield are not a team that win tight games. Every tight game they have, they lose, but they blow away teams. Mm. They win comfortably when they win the Wakefield.
They certainly do seem to.
But this is obviously Castleford against Wakefield's on telly, and it's one of them derbies, isn't it? Which is brilliant to watch and a good atmosphere guaranteed, pretty much.
An underrated derby that I think is unfortunate to get it gets lost in the crowd on Good Friday week.
There are some great games on Good Friday week, aren't there? And you know, unfortunately, they don't all get the same degree of attention. But certainly, around the Wakefield Metropolitan District, I can tell you that this game will be absolutely enormous, and I would hope it's pretty near to a capacity crowd on Thursday night. It certainly deserves it. I think both teams deserve it. And I wouldn't like to say who's going to win. You know, you tend to think that Castleford might be the favourites playing at home, and Wakefield, you know, got a load of injury troubles at the moment. I mean, that win against Wigan with 13 players, 4 players had to be taken off the field and couldn't resume. So it's a remarkable win for them. But, you know, can they go one step further and win at Castleford? It's a big ask for them, but, you know, don't write them off.
Do we need to talk about the tackling with Wigan v Wakefield?
It was a shocking tackle on David Fifita, and I cannot believe that it hasn't received the ban.
Mm.
Okie dokie. A bit further north, Leeds against Huddersfield this on Friday. That is on Friday, isn't it? I've not made that up. Yes, yeah. On Friday.
Big game.
Huddersfield have kicked into gear, haven't they?
Huddersfield were a team that had the worst injury list in the competition in the early rounds, and therefore it's no surprise that they weren't winning games. Yeah. They're getting players back now, and it's no surprise that when other teams are getting injuries, they're starting to win games.
And the funny thing is that Huddersfield have got a record of doing quite well against Leeds in Super League in recent years, haven't they? They've got a good record against Leeds. They've won a few times at Headingley, and it wouldn't surprise me tremendously if they won again. But I think if they did beat Leeds this Friday, that would be a real crisis for Leeds. Leeds are I mean, Leeds are at the bottom of the league at the moment, 2 points behind the rest. If London won and, you know,
it's 4 points.
And Huddersfield won, there'd be 4 points behind, yeah. If Wigan won, yeah.
If
those are big ifs, in all fairness, but ifs, it's possible, isn't it?
Certainly.
If Leeds lose the next three games, which are Huddersfield, Wakefield and Hull KR.
Well, you said this last week, didn't you? That's
For me, they have to make a change then.
A change of coach, you mean?
Yeah, I think so.
David Ferner is a very eloquent guy and seems very calm, certainly on the face of it. I think he's, you know, the way he talks after games and to the media and so on, I don't think you can criticise him.
Not at all. Really,
but the
nice
trouble
guy.
Is what we don't know is how he gets on with the players in training. I mean, it was interesting, wasn't it, that they introduced a few players against Workington last Friday night. You know, young McClelland got his first game. Ashton Golding was back in the side for the first time this season, actually. And Harry Newman scored a bucket full of tries, didn't he?
With the greatest respect, though, they were playing a League One side.
Well, they were, but the fact is, you know, that at least those players got a run out and they were able to show the coach what they were capable of.
I mean, there's degrees, though, isn't there, of defeating your position, and to do it by that amount of scoreline means, no, they didn't take the foot off the pedal too much.
Salford beat a team in a league above by the same scoreline.
Yeah, it tends to show...
Which is more impressive.
It tends to sort of suggest that the days when a League One side could compete against a Super League side are long past us, doesn't it?
Not the Championship, though.
No,
the Championship as well. Other than good Rochdale.
Good segue. Let's segue. Right, okay. So, Challenge Cup, fifth round.
Let me sit up. I'm going to enjoy this.
Okie dokie. Right. So, we talked about Lee and how close they got to beating Hull KR, but one team that did beat Super League opposition was previously crisis-ridden Halifax, and they defeated the London Broncos by a remarkable scoreline of 24-16 at the Shea. On Thursday evening, and we're going to hear from Martin Gonzalez in a second, because you said something interesting last week in the prelude to that match, and that was, have you seen the squad that Halifax are putting out? And it transpires that because Halifax have reserve grades and a very good youth setup, that backup to the first team's pretty good, as now, Richard Marshall found out on Thursday.
I will hold my hands up. I didn't give Halifax a prayer because of the team they put out, and more so because of the way they've been playing. But some of the players that came in, if you ever needed vindication for why reserve grade can work, they proved it on that one night alone. Because they've come in from playing reserve grade, played a Super League side, by the way, that only made four changes. This wasn't a bunch of academy kids that were playing under a Super League name. Outplayed them and beat them. If you look at some of the names missing from the Halifax team,
was it 9 players, 10 players?
There was no Will Sharp, there was no Chester Butler, there was no Scott Morrell, there was no Ben Johnston, no Brandon Moore, no Simon Griggs, no Jacob Fett. That you're practically taking half of Halifax's first choice team out there, replacing them effectively with reserve grade players. And they've gone and outplayed a Super League side that admittedly probably had one eye on next
week. There's an interesting message there for Leeds Rhinos, isn't there? Mm-hmm. Who don't have a reserve grade team but call their academy their reserves and so on, and send players out here, there and everywhere on loan and on dual registration. But, you know, Halifax are showing the way there and getting a reward for what they've done, which I think is a great thing.
Well, let's discuss the setup at Halifax in a bit more detail now. On Tuesday, I caught up with Halifax's player performance manager, Martin Gonzalez.
Well, we've been really lucky at Halifax in the last few years that running the reserves team, even though there hasn't been a massive competition, that it's worked for us as a club tremendously. We've had 16 players in the past three seasons make the competitive debuts for Halifax, who were originally brought to the club to play reserves rugby league. We furthered that this year with young prospects like Rhys Chapman-Smith, who, you know, was released by Leeds, and we've been able to give him a pathway and opportunity. And through playing in the reserves, he's broken himself into the first team fairly quickly, and he actually was a try scorer for us against London. But young players like Will Calcott, who started against London, and Curtis Davis, who was in the Welsh students team a couple of years ago, and then played for Wales actually in the qualifiers for the World Cup last off season. coming in and off the bench and contributing to the first team and helping us to win the game, it's worth its weight in gold to a club like Halifax. We don't have the resources to go and splash out big money on big name signings. We want to be self-sufficient as a club, and we want to be able to attract quality and ambitious young prospects, hopefully local lads, obviously, Halifax being a particular hotbed for rugby league. But we face a lot of competition for local lads to scholarships and academies across the game. So sometimes we have to wait and pick those boys up a little bit later on if they fall out of those systems. We've just managed to pick up Oliver Waite from Wigan. But we know all about Oliver. He was part of that really successful Siddle team, and so many of those boys are in academy systems. So sometimes that means we've just got to cast our net a little bit wider as well, and perhaps look at some non-traditional routes to find players. And it's really worked for us.
I mean, you make it sound like it's dead straightforward. But I mean, do the players come to you, or do you have to, like you say, you have to put the net out as well? So there is a bit of legwork that goes into this, the recruitment side, and the youth development side.
There certainly is. I mean, we are a club that, as a championship club and as a part-time club, we run on a very limited budget. We don't have a wide network of scouts or anything like that. A lot of credit really goes to Stevie Greenwood, who coaches the reserves with myself. But Stevie and myself are regularly out watching games, not always at the places where people expect to see us, I must admit, because we know that, as I say, sometimes we just can't offer what other clubs can offer at that point in time. You know, you see a great under 14-year-old, you know, we don't have a scholarship, so I can't offer them something that other clubs potentially can. But we do a lot of work going out, looking at matches and finding players. There are some players that approach us as well, and we rely on, you know, some contacts that we've got in the game who can also just give us a bit of a steer and a tip off to say that, you know, this one might be worth looking at, so you can be a bit more targeted in what you're going to look at. But we'd like to think that we know what we're doing here. This is my 20th season at Halifax, and you know, Stevie was a professional here, you know, many years ago, and has coached in the amateur game for a long time, and it's his third season with us here at Halifax as well. You know, we're running with the same level of intensity and the same ambition as we did when we were back in Super League. You know, we've never dropped our standards from that. We've always still aspired to be as good a youth product service as we possibly can be in the game, and one that's always been able to compete against anybody, really. And we do so on a budget, but we replace what we can't put in terms of money with energy, endeavour, enthusiasm, commitment, and you know, no little know-how as well, because we want to produce players. And the proof of the pudding is when they go out and play first team rugby and don't look out of place, and particularly if they go and compete against full-time teams like London, that really makes it worth all the while. But it also says that there's an end product there.
Absolutely. And it's also about having that connection with the community game as well, isn't it? You mentioned Siddle and the like, and it is about all that side of things, isn't it? And making sure that these junior players who might start kicking a ball in anger when the under sevens have that progression, and having the reserve grade there is just that extra little bit of a step to help them along the way.
It certainly is, and I have the utmost respect and admiration for the community game. There is no sport without the community clubs, and we should never ever lose sight of that. We've got a strong community game in and around Calderdale, and it's one that we're very proud of, and we certainly endeavour as much as we possibly can as a club not to do any damage to that. We don't want to be going raiding it unnecessarily for shirt fillers or things like that. I don't think it does anybody any credit to do that, and it potentially leaves community sides short of players. I've been a huge advocate for many years now that personally I think that anybody who's not in a first team squad of 25 ought to be entitled to be dual registered with the community club that they came from. So that whether you're in somebody's academy system or in a reserve system, if you're not selected for a game, or if you only had a few minutes midweek or whatever, why can't you be available for that community club to select if required? No pressure on them, not a dictat to say they've got to select them. but just make sure that those clubs are not short of players when they need them, and also retain the relationship between the player and its and the community club, so that if they don't end up making it, or if they've had a career and that starts to draw to an end in the professional ranks, it isn't such a big step for them to go back to the community game. And, you know, I think that's so important. We've got a real obligation to make sure that players keep playing the game. And one of the good things about the reserve system is the fact that we can have some players on a registration that's called terms and conditions. It's a limited number, but it does mean that some of our players can effectively retain their amateur status whilst playing at Halifax and seeing whether or not they are able to make the grade, but at the same time keep playing for the community club as well. And I think that really is an ideal scenario for many of the players. And it does mean that whatever contract money might be available can be directed to players who've shown that promise and earned it. But the carrot is always there for a player to come in, see whether they can make that, work hard with us. But you know what? Still be part of, whether it be Siddle, Ellen, King Cross, Ovenden, Illingworth. You know, it doesn't matter. They can go back and play for the community club as well, still be involved in that club. And we hopefully not feel as though we've raided them or taken players away and done them any harm.
Excellent. And I was going to say, I mean, Halifax have got Dewsbury in the next round, so you've certainly added to the selection headache that Richard Marshall is going to have in the coming weeks, I'd imagine. But also to add as well, I mean, how many players do you think are available now? Because there's a few rumblings that perhaps, you know, you're onto a good thing here and reserve grade might be starting to take off. And that must be a welcome thing, because that will add to the competition at reserve level too.
We would desperately love to see reserves be restored in the professional game. I think that the game needs it. I think in terms of bringing younger players through, it's ridiculous to me that clubs have to make a decision on somebody at 19. But also, you know, having to face different clubs and different challenges is part of the experience. The danger, and I suppose the caveat with that, is that I would really hope that Halifax, having achieved what it's achieved over the past few years with our reserves team — we beat St Helens a couple of seasons ago, we drew with Wigan last year, you know, we're competitive against anybody that we play against. We are producing players, and I would really hope that if they do introduce reserves, we're not sort of a victim of that, where Super League suddenly say, well, we've got reserves, we don't need Halifax or Featherstone, Bradford and Keighley that are also running reserve teams this season and doing exactly what Halifax are doing, end up being cast aside and unwitting victims of that. I would hope that the clubs that have supported reserves these past few years, when it has been a bit of a barren landscape, are included in whatever proposals come forward. But we'd love to see that. It'll make finding players much more difficult. Obviously, there'll be competition for those players. But we've tried to preempt that a little bit at Halifax as well. Some of our recruitment plans have always been with an eye to the future. We don't just recruit for the season that we're playing, but we also look to have people in our group that are for the season beyond as well. Precisely for that reason, that, you know, we don't get caught short if some of these changes come. So, you know, We're willing, ready and able to join in any expanded reserve competition next season. We would love to see one. And my plea to the game is, first of all, yes, bring reserves back. And B, don't forget about the clubs that have supported it this long. Please include us in it.
Martin Gonzalez there, player performance manager at Halifax. Halifax has been running the reserves for donkey's years now, haven't they? And we get to the stage now where, as you were saying earlier, Martin, about, you know, maybe there's a message here for Leeds. It looks like there might be a reserve grade competition which is getting the full weight of Super League at some point in the next couple of years. Halifax shouldn't be left behind in this and should be included, clearly, because they're doing it.
Yeah,
that's the message that Martin gives, and I agree with him.
I think they will be. I do think they'll be included.
I hope so.
I think the Super League clubs know the worth of, and Keighley for that matter.
And Bradford,
yeah, 100%. I don't think they will be left behind. Can say a lot of things about Halifax. Are they a Super League club? No. I think the fans want to think they are. I don't think they are.
Not yet.
They're a money man away from being a Super League club.
The stadium's there, isn't it? And the background and the player pathways are there. And
so they've got everything but the money they need to compete. But until that, ultimately, money talks, doesn't it? So they're not that, you know, they're a part time club at the end of the day. But what you've got to say about Halifax? We spoke a couple of weeks ago about being inclusive in this sport and how inclusive sport is. Halifax lead the way in that regard. Every variation of the game. Mm-hmm. Halifax are involved in, other than the recently set up Learning Disability Rugby League, which I believe that they're looking at getting involved in. Are they the flashiest club, the most exciting? No, they're not, but they do a lot of things right at Halifax, and the sport would be in a better place if all clubs did what Halifax
absolutely
did.
Absolutely would, yeah.
Halifax have got Dewsbury Rams in the sixth round away from home, and their thoughts probably starting to turn now to previous Challenge Cup runs for Halifax, because they're flying under the radar.
I merely hope, Ben, that the RFL have this plan in place for when a championship side, i.e. Halifax, makes the the semi-final of both the 1895 Cup and the Challenge Cup, because what has a club ever done double duty at Wembley on one day?
Well, you've got, this is the thing, what we've just found out from Martin Gonzalez there is you've got the squad to cope, so deal with it anyway. Right, also through to the next round was the Bradford Bulls. A great last minute, well, it was a golden point, wasn't it, from Jordan Lilley in the end, converting the field goal to beat Featherstone. And that sets
up... And they'll
up...
fancy their chances against Leeds Rhinos,
well,
won't they?
Goodness me, Bradford Bulls against Leeds Rhinos in the sixth round.
Yeah,
absolutely. Great. I mean, I interviewed Jordan Lilley this week, and he's talking 10,000, 15,000 at Oddsall.
Damien Irvine, who's the head of commercial there, he was on Back Chat yesterday, and he said that they're hoping for at least 15,000.
And I think that's a very optimistic view, but I hope he's right.
Three years ago,
yeah,
you wouldn't have even dreamed of that number being put out there, would you? But Andrew Chalmers must be going, you know what, we could get 15,000 if we get our ticket in right and stuff.
Oh, I hope they do. You know, and let's really go for it. But I think I think 10,000 is perhaps more realistic.
Be good for telly though if it was a crowd like that, and it would be a good advert for Bradford Bulls.
It'll be interesting to see which TV games they pick. I imagine it'll be, it's not announced yet, has it? I don't think. I imagine it'll be Warrington v Wigan and Hull versus Castleford.
There's four games, isn't there?
You've got
two on Sky, two on BBC.
Well, that's the BBC I'm talking about.
You've got Bradford.
Bradford Leeds will get on TV.
Yeah, and when Huddersfield St Helens, of course, as well.
Yeah. Well, yeah, people have been saying they'll put the old championship title. I don't see that.
I'd be surprised, but you never know.
I just think there's too many good, tasty games there to do that. Also, but what an opportunity for Halifax and Dewsbury, you know.
Absolutely.
One of them being the quarters.
Through to the sixth round, the only representative from League One left, Doncaster, they beat the Batley Bulldogs. Great result that for Richard Hornside.
What a tie.
Well, you know, we all saw Carl Hall, didn't we, wearing his sunglasses for the Doncaster World Cup bid video, and I'm imagining he's going to be bringing them out for that Catalans trip.
You imagine so.
I tell you who'll be playing, the players will be delighted. The players will be chuffed to bits with that. trip to Catalan.
Yeah, it can't be bad.
Obviously, also going through Salford Red Devils, they take on Hull KR, as we mentioned earlier.
How many times do those two clubs play each other?
A lot.
Of all the teams in Super League, those two must play more than any other team.
They do seem to quite a lot, yes.
Widnes also got through. They beat the York City Knights. Widnes will be taking on Wakefield Trinity away from home. Also through to the next round. I'm just reading this off as I go along. Obviously, Salford are through. Leeds are through. We should say about Salford, Rochdale Hornets, Cal Forster, wasn't there.
Yes.
A big congratulations on the birth of his new daughter. Oh, so
yes.
that was
absolutely.
So big congratulations. And commiserations to Fatohi Crusaders. But congratulations at the same time, out of the Challenge Cup, but on the same weekend, they won the Barlet National Cup final against West Hull. So
amazing.
Big congratulations to them. We'll have more on the Challenge Cup in later weeks. Those matches taking place on the 9th to the 12th of May. But that's nearly it for this week's Total Rugby League show. Just time for any other business and back chat.
Yep, Ricky Wilby's on, New York bid lead. A lot of interesting things to say. He's joined by Damien Irvine and Danny Lockwood. So, yeah, good show. Looking forward to that one going out. And next week, Mick Hogan's on from Newcastle. which will be good. So, yeah, a good show. We spoke, obviously, New York, Ottawa, obviously, Sean Edwards, obviously, and Easter, which I suppose is also obvious. But, yeah.
It's worth pointing out that on Easter Monday, League Express will be out as usual. We'll have a coverage of all the Good Friday games and so on and the Easter weekend. But, you know, the Monday, because those games are on Easter Monday, we'll have coverage of those on our website and also in League Express the following week. It's the only way we can do it.
Normally do a roundup sort of with the Easter Monday games, but make sure all the stats and stuff
make
are
sure
there.
The stats are there, yeah.
It is an action-packed weekend coming up, 5 days roughly of rugby league. It's superb stuff, isn't it?
I think it's crazy, if I'm really honest about it.
I was about to say, player welfare.
I'll tell you one of the issues that I think we should be prepared to face up to in rugby league. We haven't got a real strong players union. And I think we should have a strong players union. And one of the first things they would address is this business about playing on the Friday and then on the Monday. It's absolutely ridiculous. And particularly when so many teams have already got an incredibly long injury list. I actually think it's bordering on cruelty. You know, and it's... You know, we can't claim to be a game that's got player welfare at heart when we're having these two games and putting players through this. Now, I know some players do actually love playing, you know, two games in a short space of time, but the fact is, you know, that they don't recover from the knocks they pick up on Friday before they play on Monday, and which is often why a lot of Monday games, Easter Monday games, look to be played at almost half pace.
Without going into too much detail on Batcher, I brought this up and everyone agreed that the club should just accept it and get on with it, which I was surprised by that.
Should accept it and just carry on. Well, they've got to accept it and get on with it, haven't they? That's the point. As long as it's there, they've got to do it. But the fact is, it shouldn't be there.
The thing that I'd change, Ben,
yeah,
it's the game, the third game. So you play Good Friday, Easter Monday.
Yeah.
I don't think it's right to then play a game again later that week.
Thursday or Friday the following week.
Yeah, that's the game that I'd get.
I think Swinton, obviously they're playing on Friday, Monday, and then they play Toronto away the week after. Yes. And that's it's complications like that. Plus as well, Halifax are playing Bradford on Friday. Yeah. Then they've got to go to Toulouse on Monday. And Halifax, as we've discussed, part-time. So it's a bit... much into
it,
I suppose.
It is.
Anyway, I'm sure that can be discussed at some later date. But any other business before we go?
No, I don't think so.
Excellent. Well, totalrl.com, the place to go for all your latest breaking news. A big thank you to Martin Sadler for joining us, Matthew Shaw as well, and wherever you're going this weekend, make sure you have fun. Bye-bye.